We have an algorithm that looks at the CT scan to find the blood clot. And then we have an NLP algorithm, a natural language processing algorithm, to look at the report to figure out whether the radiologist made that diagnosis or not.
Hey everyone, welcome to Brains Behind AI, the show where we meet the innovators, entrepreneurs, and the real brains behind some of the most successful AI startups. We ask them about their journey from coming up with the idea to finding the product market fit. And from their experience, draw a set of principles that we can take away to ours. This is your host, Ari. Thank you for spending time with us. And now, let the show begin. Hello and welcome to another episode of Brains Behind AI. Today we have a very special guest and a subject that's very near and dear to me. We have Dr. Lawrence Ngo, a practicing radiologist with PhD in neurobiology. Dr. Ngo has received his MD-PhD from Duke University School of Medicine, but wait till you hear what he's working on now. As a co-founder and CEO of CoRead AI, a startup that has developed machine learning algorithms that analyzes the images and reports from radiology exams and flag studies with high probability of error for peer review, essentially looking for blind spots and things that could have been missed by a radiologist and flagging them for review. That's very interesting, and we're going to learn all about it from Dr. Ngo. So Dr. Ngo, before we dive into it, I just want to take a minute to understand, how did you dabble into machine learning?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the podcast. I have always been fascinated about how we can bring very advanced technologies to improve the human condition. And so throughout my life, I've always kind of jumped back and forth between highly technical fields and the humanities. So for example, I majored in philosophy, and then I went to medical school, and then I got a PhD where I did neurobiology, but the project for neurobiology was using fMRI scanners to scan people's brains while they made moral decisions, and understanding how their brains work for that. And so I've always had this interest in combining the two. The latest thread on what I've been working on really started when, I'm sure you remember, but several years ago, when IBM created this algorithm called Watson that was able to play Jeopardy against the reigning Jeopardy champions. And by doing so and playing those games and being able to beat the top champions, it was able to prove that it was able to do something that people thought was uniquely human and that would be, you know, quite far in the future in terms of being able to achieve something like that. But the thing that really caught my attention, I was in medical school at the time. Literally the day after, or maybe the week after, all the headlines said that Watson is going to medical school. And so the same thing that it just did to the Jeopardy champions, it was going to do to what I was doing. So, I was studying all the time, trying to learn all this medical knowledge. And I was preparing for this test too, that everyone takes in medical school. They literally were trying to train the algorithm to take that same test and to try to beat humans at it. So that's how I initially got interested in really trying to figure out how AI could be applied to the field. And so if you fast forward a little bit, when I became a resident, so after medical school, I started being more into clinical practice and things like that. And I got connected to a large teleradiology company that has access to a very large amount of data, and they're very interested in developing AI algorithms as well. I had developed some technical skills during my PhD in data science and using some machine learning. And so I joined this incubator program with this teleradiology company where they opened up a bunch of their data to try to develop algorithms that would help with their workflow. I joined that incubator program, and honestly, it was quite tough because at the time, I don't know if you're familiar, but in residency, it's very long hours, and I was trying to do this on nights and weekends on top of it too, trying to basically label all the data myself as a radiologist, and then design the algorithms, deploy them, et cetera, and then do, you know, 80 hours of clinical work a week. It was a little tough. So I was very fortunate at that point to meet my co-founder, who's also in medicine. He's currently a medical student, but had some background. And with his help, the two of us were able to build some algorithms based on that. And so just to kind of go back to your question, I've always been interested in how, again, we can apply cutting edge technology to the humanities, basically to treat humans and to improve their condition. And this seemed like, especially in the 2010s, this was the biggest wave that was coming. And I think the biggest opportunity to improve the outcomes in medicine in ways that we really haven't been able to for decades, if not centuries of practice.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. I want to understand, right, the idea that you came up with. So you're in radiology, understand you're doing your residency, and you're also exploring machine learning and AI on site. So how did the idea of building this algorithm that can go and check for high probability of error use cases in the images?
Sure.
How did that idea come?
It's kind of the confluence of two different threads. So on the one hand, I was a radiology resident. And so in a sense, I was myself, I'm an algorithm who is being trained by supervising doctors. And I mean, it's a long program, many years to finish. And as you can imagine, as you're starting out, you're making a lot of mistakes. There's still a lot to learn. And so as with any other resident, but really any other physician, you become very familiar with your limitations as a physician. You can only know so much, and you're bound to make mistakes at some point. And so on the one hand, in one part of my life, I was in residency, I would take call. So I would be in charge of doing diagnosis and interpretation of imaging at nights, for example, while there are no supervising physicians around. And then the morning after, I would learn about things that I could have done better, or diagnoses I could have made. And then we kind of correct the course of treatment based on that. So that was one part of my life. But on the other part, I was trying to train these algorithms using AI. And we were actually using the AI initially to target a different use case, which is to build an algorithm that helps to triage the studies. I think there's a very common use case of these algorithms. And I believe some of your former podcast guests have done very good work in that field. And so that was the initial target. But as we continue to develop the algorithms, again, I had one advantage of being a radiologist myself. So I spent a lot of time reviewing the outputs of the AI and trying to label the data where our algorithm had made mistakes. And I started to notice that as I was going through these cases where, it was flagged that our algorithm probably made a mistake, I found that it wasn't always the case that the algorithm was making the mistake. Sometimes the algorithm was actually correct. And the initial radiologist who was making the diagnosis was making the mistake. And so just taking a step back, the way that our algorithm works, to better understand how we came across this, we have an algorithm that looks at images. So it's like the X-ray images or CT images. And then we have another algorithm that looks at the report that a radiologist has already rendered during the course of regular clinical practice, interpreting that image. So, for example, we work on a condition called pulmonary embolism, which is blood clots in the lung. And so we have an algorithm that looks at the CT scan to find the blood clot. But then we have an NLP algorithm, a natural language processing algorithm, to look at the report to figure out whether the radiologist made that diagnosis or not. And so again, while I was trying to develop the algorithm, we were trying to identify the cases where our algorithm, for example, said that there was pulmonary embolism, that there was PE, and that our NLP said that there was no PE. And so I would review those cases and then feed it back into training. But sometimes I would find that there was actually as I reviewed the images, there was actually a misdiagnosis on these images. And so, at first I would just flag it. And then we were working on very old data from years ago. So it was too late to even reach out to the initial interpreting radiologist or anything like that. But as we continued to develop and develop more and our algorithms got better, we were finding more and more of these mistakes. And so, yeah, it gets to a point where we can actually, give feedback to the radiologists and potentially affect the way that some of these diagnoses are rendered. And so, yeah, it was basically the combination of myself in clinical practice as a resident, as a trainee, making mistakes and then finding out about them from supervising radiologists. And then just at the same time, seeing the same mistakes being made by people who had finished residency. But now I'm able to find those mistakes with the aid of our AI algorithm development pipeline. And so the confluence of those two, I think, made it clear that there was a big value that was being added here, where as a resident, I had a safety net. I always had supervising radiologists review my work and to make sure that there weren't any missing diagnoses or anything like that. But out in regular practice, you often don't have anyone going behind you to check your work. By having an algorithm that can process tens of thousands of images in a very small amount of time, you're able to do this kind of rough review of a very large amount of studies and be able to find the weaknesses in people's practice patterns.
Yeah. So let me just rephrase it one more time. So I want to make sure I got it. You're doing an image analysis on the actual image, and then you're comparing that against the notes, and you're seeing where the analysis that your algorithm is doing on the image is looking for the words that should be in, for instance, P, right? The words that should be in the notes. So when the algorithm doesn't see the words that it's diagnosing in the notes, it flags it for peer review, correct?
That's right. And it's a little trickier than just finding the diagnosis, because often, so for PE, the most common thing that people say in the reports is no evidence of pulmonary embolism, for example. So there's a little bit of NLP that needs to go into whether it's a positive or a negative phrase in terms of them mentioning a certain condition. In general, yes, that's correct. So we're able to leverage finding both the images and the reports in order to be able to find these cases for peer review.
That's amazing. Super impressive. When you started working on it, one of the biggest challenges I know from personal experience in healthcare is it's getting your hands on the data and having the data that you can work with and train your models with. So how did you get access to the images and notes? Is it because you were in the field and you had access? How did you go about it?
Sure.
And did you have to get any permissions?
Yeah, so we're very fortunate, again, that we had a very great partner in this teleradiology practice, which I actually do clinical work for now, too. So it's been a good relationship on multiple fronts. But we were lucky to just be plugged into this this incubator program that they had. And so they're a very large practice, so they were able to put in a lot of IT resources to do a high level of de-identification of the data, to put in the infrastructure for data sharing. I think with certainly now there's added benefit to that. I'm actually a practicing clinician with the same company too. So I think it helps to in that regard. But I think that it was kind of a different time when we started. It was super hard to find good data sets, especially in healthcare. But I know that a lot of people in, at least in the radiology field, have done really good work in trying to publish open data sets that are de-identified. The condition I mentioned, pulmonary embolism, there's a very large publicly available data set for that condition now that was labeled by a consortium of radiologists and hospitals. And so I think the field in general is realizing the huge value that is being by having data out there for people to be able to process. And it certainly wasn't the case when we first started.
Yeah, well, that's impressive. And it seems like you and your co-founder wrote the first set of algorithms.
That's right. Yeah. So basically he was doing medical school. I was in residency and we were just spending nights and weekends just trying to cobble together algorithms and labeling data and stuff like that. So I think that on the one hand, it was a little tough. There were some times where we just didn't have enough hours in the day. But on the other hand, we got to really know the data well. I think one challenge that people face in the healthcare field is that it's a lot to, there's a very wide breadth of knowledge to both know the intricacies of what you're looking at for the medical images, but also to be able to train the algorithms. And so, again, I think one of our advantages has been the fact that we've tried to design the algorithms in a way that mimics the way that human radiologists would approach a problem, or at least how I would approach the problem. And in general, it's a very large search space. There's a lot of different ways you can design these algorithms and stitch them together to produce the output that you want. I don't think there's enough time for anyone to explore that whole search space. So we've just taken a heuristic to basically try to stay as close to what real radiologists do to solve these problems that need to be solved on 2D images, 3D images. There's kind of these nuances. And so by us labeling all the data, reviewing all the data, but designing the algorithms in a way that would fit with how we labeled the data, how we knew we labeled the data, I think we were able to have a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah, very interesting. So you have humanized the model. you brought that human doctor's analysis aspect to it. So where are you in terms of your team now? Is it sort of, do you have more developers, more people working with you now?
Yeah.
How far along are you?
Yeah, we're fortunate enough to close like a pre-seed round a couple months ago, and we're just growing out the team from here. We're still, my co-founder and I are still very involved in the algorithm development and the annotations, since, as I mentioned, I feel like that's been one of our competitive advantages. But we're definitely trying to scale up the efforts and try to provide algorithms for a wide variety of diagnoses and try to have as high accuracy for these algorithms as possible.
Yeah. In terms of sort of development, it seems like you've just done a seed round. That's great. Now, are you also thinking about getting the model into production in an actual real setting? And then how are you thinking about going about it? Are you going to partner with, say, for instance, Duke University where you are at? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah. So we've been very fortunate to get connected to a lot of other companies in the field. So, and those companies have done a lot of work in trying to build platforms at hospital systems and at radiology practices to deploy AI algorithms. And so the field of radiology and AI is very hot. There's a lot of investment in the field at this point. And I think that everyone is trying to race to be the app store of radiology AI. And what I mean by that is establish some kind of platform at a network of hospitals around the world where any other company can just plug in their AI algorithm for whatever use case and then be able to serve as a platform for that. And so there's a handful of, well, probably more than a handful at this point, of companies aiming for that model. And we feel that we're not experts per se at building large IT infrastructures and app store platforms and things like that. Our focus is a little bit more narrow, which is to say we have the medical expertise and the AI development expertise. And so we just want to develop some high quality models that both look at the images and reports, as I said, for that use case. And we're very happy to partner with as many people as possible in order to get that delivered to different hospitals and radiology practices. So yeah, we're actively working with a couple of those different platforms. And I don't envy the challenge that they have to overcome in terms of figuring out how to orchestrate all of the integration and things like that. They've poured a lot of resources into that and they've done a lot of good work with that. And so we're very happy to be as collaborative as possible. Again, our focus is narrow. And so, yeah, again, if anyone's listening to this, we've always been as open to collaboration as possible. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it seems like you're solving the hard problem and then let someone else who is good at managing the ecosystem manage and deploy it within the ecosystem. One thing I'm thinking about is radiology is very broad, right? If I think of it in terms of training machine learning models, are you focusing on a specific use case or specific set of use cases that you want to target first and then scale from there? What is your strategy in terms of executing on how to approach and tackle this?
Yeah, so our overall strategy is to build on what progress we've made so far, which is we've made a fair amount of progress in terms of the exact use case that we've been talking about, which is to find the radiologist mistakes. And we've been doing that on CT scans. And so we're continuing to try to expand and improve on the algorithms that do that. And so one of the general directions that we're interested in is that, you know, there's a lot of reasons that people get CT scans. One is cancer follow-up, but the other is, you know, if you get in a car accident or have some kind of injury, a CT scan is often the scan that people go to. When you do a CT scan, it's often of a very large amount of the body. And let's say, you know, you wonder if you broke a rib or got some kind of lung injury, you'll scan, but part of the scan covers a lot of things that are not in the initial thing of interest. So let's say you'll catch like the thyroid gland, you'll be able to image part of the liver, part of the kidneys, things that you might have not been initially concerned about. But again, as a practicing radiologist, but also just in general, there's a lot of what are called incidental findings that come up. And so these incidental findings are findings that we weren't initially looking for, but might actually be something clinically significant. The most common case being like a early cancer or something like that. So we're very interested in targeting that because, again, based on my clinical experience, these things can be missed by radiologists because they're very hard to catch. They're often not the thing of focus. And so we want to provide a good feedback mechanism for people to be able to identify these misses. And so I think the other buzzword people are using is opportunistic screening, for example. So a lot of disadvantaged patient groups may not get the normal screening measures, for example, mammographies or other screening measures. And so if we already have them in the emergency department for some other reason and getting a scan on them, it's a good opportunity for us to be able to screen them for these other diseases at the same time. In general, yeah, we're focused on, again, finding these things that are easy for radiologists to miss, hopefully just providing a higher level of care for people who are getting CT scans for various reasons.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Now, I want to take a minute to talk about the challenges you have experienced as you have gone through this journey from coming up with this idea to getting the data and then building it. What would you say, what was one or two big challenges you had to tackle to make it all work?
There's many big challenges, and we're still dealing with them now as we speak. So I think that the first thing is with AI development, the quality of the data is super important. We deal with very large data sets, and a lot of that data I labeled myself. We've had some help along the way too, but even though I'm highly motivated to make sure the annotations are as high quality as possible, mistakes just happen along the way in terms of labeling the data, especially when you are dealing with such large data sets. And so I think that often people focus so much on algorithm development and fine tuning and hyperparameter tuning and all this other stuff, but really understanding the data and making sure that it's labeled in a high quality fashion has been a big problem that we've had to face and problem that we've tried to solve over and over again. So yeah, you know, we'll be chasing our tails trying to train up an algorithm, but then we realized there was some pre-processing error, and then, you know, a large block of our data was incorrectly labeled or something like that. Just being really meticulous with the data and data science, I think, is important. And then I think the other thing, this is, I think, a problem in the field in general, is that the field of algorithm development is often not as, I guess, compared to other fields, not as rigorous in regards to controlling for biases. So what I mean by this is, in other clinical fields, you have double-blind randomized trials to make sure that experimenter bias isn't playing a role and things like that. And I think our field in general, when we develop all these algorithms, there's certainly a bias towards reporting results that might be overfitted. So for example, an algorithm might perform great on the data set that they're working on, but then it won't generalize as well just because they've kind of analyzed the data set that they've had for a very long time and worked very hard to get good results on that data set. And so there's this kind of overfitting like phenomenon. There aren't that many. I shouldn't say there aren't any, but there aren't as many end-to-end kind of studies out there. Meaning, for example, to get FDA clearance for one of these algorithms, you need to show a certain level of algorithm accuracy. But that's different from showing that the algorithm actually improves patient outcomes in some way. And so I think the field is moving towards that way. It's really hard to run those studies showing that algorithms can actually impact how the patient outcomes, and certainly those studies are starting to come out now. But that's been another struggle, just trying to make sure that ultimately we're able to prove that, you know, our algorithms are doing something important rather than just being part of the AI hype and having an algorithm just like everyone else.
Yeah, that's really good. And now, sort of as you look towards the future, right? What are your hopes and dreams for what you want to accomplish with CoRead? It seems like you're getting traction, you're doing these partnerships. What does the next 3 to 5 years look like for you?
I think that there's two sides of the coin for radiology, which is improving the quality of the care that's being provided, and improving the other side would be improving the efficiency of radiologists. I think that the progress of our company, hopefully, is that we continue to improve our algorithms to a degree that they're more and more accurate, such that the peer review system can be more and more streamlined, and we get to a point where these algorithms can be at a level of accuracy where they can really augment the workflow. Both right now, we're helping the quality standpoint, but potentially in the future, helping radiologists become more efficient as well. And what I mean by that is, again, this is speculative, maybe a couple of years from now, but if an algorithm is sufficiently accurate and it says that, you know, there's no, for example, there's no evidence of a fracture on this x-ray or something like that, then that might help reduce the volumes that radiologists have to read in the future. Right now, it seems like a huge shortage of radiologists. I know my practice is trying to hire pretty aggressively. And radiologists are also overworked. There's a lot of burnout. There's just a lot of work to be done. And I don't think probably not enough people to do it. Kind of working towards a future where we can help augment the work that radiologists already do and help to provide higher quality care while keeping the radiologists more balanced and less burnt out.
I wonder if we can get to a point where you have the algorithm look at the image, write the report, and then we compare that report with the radiology's generated report, mm-hmm. and then get to a point where we are comfortable enough to have the machine learning do the first run at the radiology. But I think the future technology is definitely getting there. What advice? Healthcare is such, to your point, right? Healthcare is a place where AI and ML can had huge, huge value from all aspects and all across the value chain, all the way to improving outcomes and all that, right? But at the same time, there is this, what I'm seeing is And again, you touched on it too. There's a huge shortage, not just on the medical and clinical side, but there is also a shortage of data scientists and machine learning engineers that understand the healthcare space and the domain enough to be able to create value there and work there. And it's going to take some time. And I feel healthcare is where there are a lot of opportunities and a lot more opportunities than anywhere else right now for making that impact. So on that note, what advice would you have for the future entrepreneurs that want to be in healthcare, that want to do something on the clinical side? How should they approach it? How should they think about it, given your experience?
Yeah. So again, there's a lot of different ways that people have come at this problem. I can just speak to how we arrived at where we are, which I think there's a huge advantage to knowing the actual clinical part as well as possible. So I think the thing that's unique about healthcare that's different from other fields is that, let's say, the average, like back when the App Store was hot, like on mobile phones, and everyone was developing apps. I mean, people still are to some degree. I think that the something people take for granted is that if you're building an app for ride sharing or something like that, the average engineer who programs that will finish work for the day and then use that app to get home or whatever. And so they, in a sense, they kind of understand the basic logic of it and how it's supposed to work and what value it provides. I think healthcare, it's a steep learning curve in terms of all of, not only the clinical content, like what you learn in medical school, but there's this huge other part, which is the economics of it. Like, I think I barely understand how all the money flows around in healthcare. Myself and I've been in healthcare for a while. And then you add that level of complexity onto the complexities of developing AI and machine learning. And so it's almost like you're trying to develop this product in the dark, where if you're not somewhat aware of what's going on the medical side and the healthcare side. And so I guess my advice would be, if you're already in the healthcare space, I think it's a huge opportunity to learn machine learning and the AI, because you have this advantage of knowing something about the healthcare space already. But if you're coming from outside in, then really taking some time, if you're working on a certain condition or pathology, to really dig deep into understanding what the flow is, like how healthcare interacts with patients for that condition, how they improve outcomes for that condition, and then how the economics works around that. And you'd be surprised that people in healthcare don't always know the whole picture too. So the physicians might not know the healthcare economics, the hospital administrators may not know the the nitty-gritty of the treatment algorithm, things like that.
I feel even healthcare economists don't fully understand the healthcare economics. On that note, what advice would you have for the industry, right? How can they drive more adoption? How can they facilitate? What role can healthcare players play to enable some of that efficiencies and outcome improvements that technology will bring?
Well, I think one thing is being more attuned to the potential of the algorithms at a certain time. So over time, all these algorithms are getting better, but it takes time for them to get better. And so if you rewind back to 10 years ago, back when I was, I watched Jeopardy with Watson, IBM Watson. I think that the industry was preparing to have algorithms that were much far more advanced than what was actually available at the time. And so there was a lot of setting up and investing for solutions that I don't think quite existed yet. The algorithms are better today than they were 10 years ago, but understanding exactly the capabilities of today's algorithms or even next year's algorithms, I think, is super important, because it's all about timing. If you you mentioned something about algorithms preparing like a preliminary report or something like that, I think that would be great. And that would be a huge improvement in efficiency and potentially quality as well. But I think realizing, being able to predict when that development will happen, I think is key for the industry. So you can make a big mistake if you think that that's going to happen right now in terms of trying to get everything together for that. But you could potentially make a mistake too if you mispredict and think it's going to be too far off too. So as far as the industry is concerned, I think it's very important to just keep up to date on exactly what the algorithms are able to do, but reading a little bit further beyond the headlines too. Like the headlines can often inflate what they're doing, what the algorithms can do, and just getting a little bit more into the details about what its capabilities are, I think is important.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And last question, it's actually more personal in nature, and I want to understand, I'm just curious. Right now I see you're building this startup, you are also teaching, and you're a practicing radiologist, right? And even as you told your story, I go back and see, even when you were doing your residency, you were also building this, doing things at night. I want to understand, what is the secret to all this productivity? How can you do like three jobs and all of those jobs that requires intense level of commitment and time and hard work and do them simultaneously? What is the secret, Dr. No, for that?
Well, if I'm still trying to find the secret itself, it's not always, you know, as you would perceive. But I think that I certainly have a very strong support network, family and friends who are able to help me, guide me along, help me. You know, one of the toughest things is that everything's easy when you're in the zone. So if everything's working out, it's easy to work a ton of hours on a certain project. But I think the thing that really matters is how you approach it when things are going wrong. So there are certainly patches in our company where all the algorithms aren't training well, or the data is all, you know, mislabeled or something like that. And being able to have people to support you along the way and get over those rough patches, I think, is the important part. But other than that, I feel like once you hit your stride and you enjoy what you do, then I feel like it's not really a struggle really to count the hours that you've put into a certain thing. You kind of lose track of time. And at the end of the day, you wonder, you know, where all the time went. So I wouldn't say that, you know, it's any power of will or anything like that, but being able to get at least past the rough patches and then be on cruise mode otherwise when things are going well, I think is worked out okay.
Yeah, no, that's great too. Yeah. Doing things you love and enjoy and then being in the flow with those things is the key. That's great. Thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate it. This is super informational. And I'm sure the audience would love and enjoy it as well. Glad we connected. So thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. If you like what you heard and are interested in more, visit us online at brainsbehind.ai and sign up for my monthly AI startup tracker. That's where I cut through the noise and bring you AI startups that are making tangible progress. Till next time, go out, be the brains behind AI.